On behalf of Tosi School, may we express our deep appreciation for your kindness in giving us the opportunity to ask you a number of questions concerning Buddhist education. The first question is, would you please say something about education and Buddhist education in particular?
Human beings are noticeably different from most of the creatures in the world. See, many animals that are able to take care of themselves survive within a few days, a few hours, even a few minutes of being born. Human beings, on the other hand, are completely helpless and vulnerable for a number of years. They have to live with their parents, caregivers, and they have to learn many of the things that for other creatures are instinctual. So we are at a disadvantage with our instincts perhaps, but we have this marvelous ability to learn, to absorb new information, to apply it. So we are learning creatures. For many of us, we may believe that learning is something we do at the beginning of our lives, or perhaps for a few years in institutions and schools and colleges. But in Buddhist understanding, then we should have a goal and ideal of learning right throughout our lives. So we see life as a learning process. And Buddhism is a very unusual religion. It's very different from the religions that grew up in the Middle East, which are essentially belief systems, religions which stress faith in the dogmas that are laid down in their holy books. Buddhism, on the other hand, is not a belief system, but it's an education system. With the idea that human beings have within themselves the potential to completely liberate themselves from all suffering through a clear, penetrative understanding of the way things are. So we see the greatest sin, if you like, or the biggest obstacle to true happiness in life is ignorance. And so the Buddhist teachings teach us how to transcend ignorance. So from that you can see quite clearly it's a matter of education. I would say that Buddhism is a religion which is uniquely suited to application in the conventional education systems that we have, because it is an education par excellence. It is the complete or perfect form of education. So what's a Buddhist education? That would be an education in which it fulfills all the necessary standards of academic excellence, knowledge of all the skills, and the mastery of all the information that all education systems seek to provide. But it doesn't see education merely as a preparation for life in the capitalist system, or in life as a householder and making a living and so on. But it sees education provided to children by schools as one which is in harmony with the larger principles of the Buddhist education system, which we sometimes call the Eightfold Path, or the threefold training or threefold education of Sila, Samadhi, Banya. So the education that we're trying to develop, which we're calling Buddhist education, is then one in which we're adapting Buddhist developmental principles to the education process, one which involves an education of the child's relationship to the physical world it lives in, it developing a wise relationship to the social world in which the child is living and will live as an adult, and developing a wise relationship to ability to deal constructively with emotions, finding wise, intelligent ways of dealing with negative emotions like fear, anxiety, greed, anger, depression, and so on, and developing skillful means to develop all the positive qualities of things like patience, resilience, effort, kindness, awareness, inner peace, integrity, and so on. But most importantly, the jewel in the crown of Buddhism is its emphasis on wisdom and the practical techniques to develop and to nourish this wisdom faculty that we do all possess within us, but rarely bring out and make use of in our lives. So it's an education system which is not overlooking any of the traditional features of an education system, but one which adds on to it or incorporates it within the larger, more comprehensive idea of education which is given to us by the Buddhist teachings.
Prajan, there have been a lot of criticism of rote learning and calls for school to teach more creative thinking. What is your opinion?
Well, let's first of all separate rote learning from memorization. I think that it's been recognized for thousands of years, really, that memorization of texts is a very useful element in an education system for a number of reasons. One, it's a very good mental exercise. You have to be very patient, you have to apply yourself, and it's a good workout for your brain to memorize things, to be quite systematic about it. Having memorized information, the next step is that you can arrange it systematically, you master it, you digest that information, and then you can use it as the raw material for creative thinking. I mean, creative thinking doesn't arise in a vacuum. You need to have building bricks, you have to have raw materials. And if you have those raw materials with you, not in a book or on a computer somewhere, but right with you, then your ability to think on the spot, to deal with situations, unexpected situations, and to draw upon that knowledge is obviously going to be great help to you. I think that memorizing information also gives the student a great deal of confidence, the feeling that you're on top of your subject, you know your subject, that you're very familiar with it. It's not something that you can access when you need it, but it's right there with you. I think that kind of confidence is very good for children to have. And the criticisms, I think, are really of learning things because you're told to, without any real interest in the subject, and then not being taught and not being interested to make use of that information, so you learn it and then you forget it. I mean, as we've all done with so much information we learned as children, it's not something that is restricted to Thai education system either. I think a lot of this rote learning was in fact imported from the West. There's this idea And I think a false one, that, you know, the Western schools are full of kids who are incredibly creative and they don't just memorize things, but often the Thai people who have contact with Western schools and colleges are wealthy people who send their children to the best schools in England and America. So their contact with Western education system is like of the best, and so it's quite distorted and not a fit comparison. So I would say that the original Thai system, as it was taught in monasteries, well, yes, you memorize a lot of stuff, but then there's emphasis on discussion and debate. It's like Dhammasakaccha, this idea of once you learn something, you talk it through, you discuss it, you question it, you look at it from different angles, you assimilate it, make use of it. This is what I understand to be the original Buddhist approach, and that's something that you can find from accounts of the monastic universities in Nalanda and Taxila in the old days. So that's the original Buddhist approach.
Prachan, I have a follow-up question on creative thinking, because in our society, people place very high value on, they regard it as creative thinking, what is unique, what is different from others, but then you end up having something which very, very hard to understand, and you have some kind of creative thinking which is translated into high financial returns also. What is your view on that?
Well, I think there are a number of different points there in your question. In the realm of the arts, then the effort to be different, to stand out from the pack, which may be a purely artistic endeavor, may well have some kind of financial incentive. But I think in the end, it tends to lead to a kind of extreme and coarsening scene in which you try to be more and more outrageous, and the value of the piece is the extent to which it can give rise to strong emotions, and usually the strong emotions are the ones which are stimulated by the coarser kinds of stimuli. So I don't think that kind of creativity is necessarily such a good thing. You know? In let's say in the business world, where you're looking at we're talking more about finding new solutions to old problems, looking at things in new ways rather than, say, producing carpets, for instance, and selling carpets. You rent out squares of carpets. So instead of buying a new carpet, you can you just buy squares of carpets to replace the bits that are worn out, and sort of a new idea or creative thinking that I appreciate is the traffic lights, which have the countdown from them, so that motorists don't have to get so tense when they're waiting for the lights to change colour. Now, those kinds of creativity comes from this ability to step back from a situation, look at it afresh, look at it from a different angle. And that kind of ability I see as something that can be cultivated, particularly through Buddhist techniques of mindfulness practice, ability to look within, to let go of unnecessary thoughts of the past and the future, to be able to focus intently on an object, the ability to put down the habitual thought processes and just dwell in that very fertile state of clarity and mindfulness. So it's a peace, not a kind of a dull, dreamy kind of peace, but a very sharp, bright kind of awareness. You may be familiar with the hyper-realist school of art, and those pictures which are incredibly sharp, and that's the mind which has been well trained in the Buddhist system, and that mind, I would say, is one which is very much creative in this second sense, the ability to look at things in a fresh light, to recognize things that otherwise we might be quite heedless about. And that kind of creativity is something that I think should be and can be more systematically developed in education.
Some parents are concerned that an education with emphasis on Buddhist principle would be at the expense of academic excellence. Is this a valid concern?
Well, in a word, no. My reason for saying that, I think it's interesting just how many Western ideas and attitudes have slipped into Thai culture, like under the radar. Mm-hmm. Some Western ideas are so obviously different from traditional Thai ideas. You're aware that's a very Western kind of idea, you know, like say you should confront people when you have a problem with them, or things like that. But there are other kind of values and attitudes and prejudices which people have absorbed without realizing it. And I think this is a kind of a good example, because in the West it's long been held that to be good is to be a little bit stupid. There are a lot of sort of jokes about people, a very kind of the saintly person who's very naive, easily taken advantage of, is a joke figure. Now I would suggest that that's not a figure, an idea, which has been around in Thailand for a long time. And one of the reasons I say that is because if we look at the Pali word, the Buddhist word for goodness, what's the word that we find? The word is kusala. And the etymology of that word is intelligence. Mm-hmm. So it's built into the Buddhist view of life, of things, that goodness is intelligent. Intelligence is good, goodness is intelligent. If you have someone who's good and is unintelligent, it's not goodness in the sense that we mean. If you're intelligent and it's not expressed through goodness, then it's a false, counterfeit kind of intelligence. Kusala, goodness, what does that mean? You know, there is a lot of talk about how every religion teaches people to be good, therefore they're all the same. And of course that's a very superficial way of looking at things, because it begs the question, well, what is goodness? Does everyone who uses this word mean the same thing? I think not. So in Buddhism, you see, we say that kusala, or goodness, is that which involves the abandonment of unwholesome, of defiled states of mind, and involves the cultivation of the wholesome states of mind. In other words, things which are spring from greed, hatred, and delusion are bad, and things which are free from or leading to freedom from greed, hatred, and delusion are good. So for that reason, that stressing goodness in Buddhist sense means stressing intelligence, teaching kids to be intelligent about how they live in the world. So keeping precepts is not sort of just being good, it's the most intelligent way that you can live in society, both for your own peace of mind, self-respect, and also for the happiness and the welfare of the community that you live in. And the development, or the inner development, of the emotional development, wisdom development, means that you have a clarity of mind, an inner peace, a lack of ego and selfishness, which means that you see things more clearly, and that you have principles that you live by, and that you are able to contribute to society constructively. Someone who follows this path is not going to be corrupt, you know. It's, and when people talk about sort of Buddhist education as being unrealistic, or so I'm saying, well, look, what more direct, effective, intelligent way of dealing with the causes of corruption, which is a huge economic social problem in the country, what better way of dealing with it than dealing with the minds of young people before they become corrupt? It's like vaccinate them against it until they just feel that it's unacceptable. It's just something that they would find shameful, and to have good reasons for it, not just an emotional prejudice against it, but to be too intelligent to be corrupt. Corrupt people, if you understand the law of karma, someone can make millions of pounds, but they are extremely unintelligent to do that. So intelligence is goodness, and goodness is intelligence. And so academic knowledge, when it is founded upon and within the framework of a right view and clear understanding of what academic knowledge is to be used for, will not be used in a wrong way to take advantage of other people and to create problems in society, but somebody will be able to enjoy the acquisition of academic knowledge and use it constructively.
How do you see the role of the teachers in Buddhist education?
Well, I think the important principle here is to practice what you preach, and to be a good example. My own experience as a school student was that I tended to work a lot harder and to enjoy the lessons in which I respected, looked up to the teacher, and where the teacher had a real love of the subject they were teaching, and they had a love of teaching itself. And I think that we can easily overlook the fact that what we communicate when we teach is not restricted to the words we use, but perhaps the most important thing we communicate is who we are. And if teachers can see their own study and development of the Eightfold Path as an important factor in their life as teachers, and see it as absolutely a necessary part of it, and then they are communicating that through themselves, through who they are, then you have a foundation for Buddhist education. The idea of the teacher is in Buddhism is of the good friend, or we call the Kalyana Mitta. And that's someone who has particular qualities that nourish the student and create the right kind of environment for learning to take place. So the teacher is someone who has that warmth and kindness, and the extent that students enjoy being with them. They feel affection towards the teacher. They feel respect for the teacher. They feel the teacher is a good example to them. Teacher is someone who is patient with the children and their different personalities, learning styles, and the frustrations that can easily arise. Is someone who puts a lot of effort into finding skillful means of communicating with children, both verbal and non-verbal. A lot of effort into finding different ways of explaining things, the ways that will be most suited to the children, both as a group and as individuals. And is someone who whose presence in the child's life improves the quality of their life. The child feels, should leave the school and say, I'm just so glad I knew that teacher. I'll never forget that teacher and what he or she did for me. Yeah, that's and I had teachers like that, and I'm sure you have, that you never forget. And I think it's wonderful profession, you know, that you can make your livelihood and to have a positive effect on people's lives, not just through the time where they're learning with you, but right throughout their whole careers and right until they have their own children and grandchildren as well. So the ideal of the teacher as the Kalyana Mitta, as the good friend, and that's not just a good friend to the children, but seeking to be a good friend to other teachers and to be good friends to the parents of the people. So we're trying to create this culture, if you like, of good friendship, a good friendship culture, and that's one which has a balance between the emotional side, which is characterized by kindness and metta, and then the intellectual side, which is this interest in learning and finding the truth and dwelling in truth. These are the two characteristics of the Kalyana Mitta culture, which we're seeking to model in a Buddhist school.
Prachan, with the liberalization of the Thai education system, international schools have become very popular. What is your view on that?
Well, I don't have, you know, that much direct information about it. I haven't been into international schools. I've spoken to some teachers, some Western and Thai teachers, and I think it varies a lot from school to school. And again, some is somewhat going to the child's experience is going to depend upon the quality of the teachers that the school employs as well. If I have any reservations or worries, is that this kind of international secular kind of approach is one which may well benefit the child in the short term in terms of entering the world of work and business, and it is, you know, essentially an education restricted to the wealthy and the middle class. I wonder whether it creates some division in the society between those having this kind of special English medium education and those in schools generally. I'm not sure about that. The lack of any specifically Buddhist input particularly in of the kind that we're talking about in the Buddhist schools, can leave a kind of a vacuum in the child's mind, and a lack of roots and appreciation for a child's own country, for Thailand, its history, its culture, the sasana. Of course, in those cases where the parents themselves consider that their responsibility and that they can provide all that the international school is not providing in that area, then that may well be fine. But my guess is that not many families do provide that. So I do think that for a child to be grounded in and to have that kind of deep appreciation for his own and pride in and joy in his own culture and religion is something which is very important to psychological well-being and to the well-being of the society at large. So, of course, parents, have the ability to choose, and they obviously see that the advantages outweigh the disadvantages, and that's their right to do that. But I think that it might be good for people just to give some thought to this particular perspective, and if they do choose to send children to international schools, to consider whether that might require them to put a lot more effort themselves into those areas which the child is not going to be getting any instruction.
Thank you. My next question is, Buddhism is perceived as leading to peace, contentment and few desires. Is this not an obstacle to development?
In Buddhism we talk about two different kinds of desire. Okay. When you lack understanding of something, or you misunderstand the nature of something, then immediately the false desires arise in your mind, what we call dhanha or craving. Whereas when you have a clear understanding of something, when your mind is at peace and equanimous, the point that cannot be stressed enough is that the mind doesn't become inherently passive, but that a different kind of desire arises. And this is the desire which is powered by compassion, and it's a desire for truth, a desire to do good, and to create happiness and benefit for those around. And this you can see so clearly from the great monks and from people who have devoted themselves to Buddhist practice throughout their lives. These people don't just sit back and take it easy, usually quite the contrary. So again, this is a kind of a misguided idea that being peaceful or having few desires or being contentment equals sort of lazy passivity, anything's all right, everything goes. Quite the contrary. But when you're free of selfish desires and ego and desires for fame and fortune and for wealth and all these things, then you have very pure motivations, and there are no conditions, no strings attached, nothing in it for you. And so the effort that such a person who is developed in that way and put forward is so much more powerful than someone who is always in the back of their mind. You know, they want something from it, and that there's some craving. So the idea is that the ending of craving is not the ending of all desire. It's the ending of unwholesome and negative desires. But the positive desires actually become purified rather than disappearing altogether.
Is it unrealistic or even detrimental to a child's best interest to emphasize goodness and virtue if they will have to live their life in a harsh and very unfriendly environment?
I sometimes feel that the emphasis on sort of the cutthroat, competitive nature of modern society is overdone. It's not really, you know, as bad as all that. And I don't think it's at all true that people who are trying to live a good life with integrity and kindness are necessarily the losers. From very simply, if you are honest in your business dealings, yes, you may miss out on some contracts that you might have got if you've been willing to be more dishonest or crooked. But at the same time, in the long term, you get a reputation for honesty and trustworthiness. And then, and there are so many people who are looking for business partners who are honest and trustworthy. So you miss out on some and you gain on others. But also, if the society is one in which there's a lot of, say, dishonesty and corruption, then surely we have a responsibility to try to do something about that. It's not a fixed, permanent situation. It's a conditioned phenomena, and that you know, your choice is, well, do you want to increase and to contribute towards that side of society, or do you want to add your efforts and energies to the other side, to the bright side rather than the dark side? Now, who's, you know, where do you want to make your stand? And how can you live your life so that you have a sense of self-respect, and that you you can live your life such a way that when your children grow up and they say, you know, well, how did you make your money? You can look them in the eye and be quite honest with them. You don't have anything to hide, anything to feel ashamed of, and you can look back on your life and you think, well, yeah, I may not have, you know, achieve the very best or the reach the very top or whatever, but I led a good life, and I did a lot of good in my life, and I'm very proud of how I lived my life. And I think that's a wiser way of dealing things. So yeah, myself, I think, yeah, if I had to choose between being honest and missing out on some pleasures or not making quite so much money, I still think that would be preferable, you know, to being dishonest and being a multimillionaire and, you know, being on society page of the newspapers every day. You know, what do you really want from your life?
Thank you very much, Prajan Thayasaro. On behalf of both of us, Kru On and myself, of the Thosai School, we would like to thank you very, very much for your time and your clear explanation on Buddhist education.